Hello, Earl Grey listeners, and welcome to another episode of Earl Grey. Before this episode starts, we would actually like to say thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for a record monthly download for Earl Grey.
Woohoo! We are so excited. Thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. We love that you're listening and supporting us and enjoy your comments on the Babel Conference. And we just are truly humbled to be here. Thank you so much, listeners.
Yeah, and a big thanks goes as well to Darren, Daniel, and Philip, who, you know, well, we've all kind of, it's been a record month. It's not been without everyone kind of bringing together and people downloading old episodes as well as new episodes, and people that listened with those guys and then gave us a chance as well. So yeah, like, so much of the credit goes to those guys too.
Absolutely. So if, without further ado, also, we also have the drawing for the Blu-ray TNG Blu-ray set, and Amy has all the names in a pot, and here we go.
All right, so here they are. Shake, shake, shake.
It's starting a magic drum roll here.
Yes.
James Horner score blaring.
So all the names were entered, and so woohoo, we have 17 Brian. You are the winner of our Blu-ray Next Generation Complete Seasons, generously donated by Ju Kim, one of our listeners. And so 17 Brian, please contact us so that we can get you that Blu-ray set as soon as possible, because I know you want it. It's so fabulous.
Awesome. Yes, please contact us as soon as you can. We can definitely post a link on the on this episode, and we'll get you your prize as speedy as possible.
Yay. Thank you, everyone who gave us a ratings and review on the iTunes store. And we love to hear what you have to say, so continue doing so.
Absolutely. We really, really appreciate it. And, you know, hopefully you enjoy your prize, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more prizes in future.
Oh, yes, I think there is.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
Hi, this is Robert O'Reilly. My name is Gowron. Honor to you and your house. You're listening to Trek FM.
Earl Grey Hot.
Hello and welcome to Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated Star Trek The Next Generation podcast. I'm one of your hosts for today, Lee Hutchison, and I'm joined as always by Richard Marquez. How are you, Richard?
I'm doing good. It's warm over here. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's cold as always here in Scotland. So, it feels like, you know, I think you're the only person that's been a consistent every episode now of Earl Grey after your amazing interview last week with Morgan Gendel. I'm back again. But unfortunately, Amy is not with us today. She's away having an amazing holiday out there on Risa. So we're envious. So here we are in Earl Grey HQ. And it wouldn't be right just to have me and Richard here just, you know, playing with all the toys. We've thought we'd enlist a special guest to join us for today. And we've enlisted Kay from To The Journey to join us. Hello, Kay.
Hi, Lee. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm not too bad. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad not to be the token Brit on this episode for on this show for once. It's an awfully big treat.
Yeah, I know how that feels.
But you know, we do share something in common.
Yes, and what is that, Richard?
Well, we all grew up in the UK. Well, exactly. I didn't grow up completely in the UK, but yeah.
Yeah, so we've been wanting to do this episode for ages, and it's just the way it's kind of landed with Amy being away. We thought we'd, you know, she didn't grow up in the UK. She cannot contribute anything whatsoever to this episode. So we were like, well, we'll go for this episode today. And we thought, well, we've got to get Kay on board, you know, someone that's got that experience as well. And we're going to talk about what it's like to grow up as Star Trek fans in the UK, that kind of Trek FM is mostly like American, North American host, and we know what it's like to have grown up in America and all those experiences. But what was it like to have that British feeling? What was it like to watch it on the BBC, have all the different experiences that being a Star Trek fan provides in the UK, and talk about maybe the pros and cons of that experience being away from the Star Trek kind of epicenter, as it were. So, Richard, I'm going to come to you last, because I think yours will be quite unique, how Mr. All-American G.I. Joe himself is became so anglicized. You know, Kay, you're the special guest. How did you, you know, wherever you grew up in Britain, how did you get into Star Trek? What was it about kind of Britain that made you the Star Trek fan that you are?
Well, I'm not even sure who it was in our family, actually, that decided that, you know, we should start watching The Next Generation when it first came on, which, if I'm correct, I believe in the UK was about 1990. So it was about 3 or so years later than it was in the States. We didn't get it till a bit later on. I know my dad had watched quite a bit of the original series in first run. But I don't think he'd ever been sort of a big, big Trekkie. He'd been somebody who watched it, but not a mega fan. So when it sort of came on, I suspect it was probably my brother actually sort of spotting it in the TV Times. Big article. I remember this big article, double pager in the TV Times, big picture of Farpoint Station, big article all about Star Trek coming back. I remember that article, and actually I think the reason I remember it is because we had the Farpoint Station Farpoint episode. We had that taped on VHS, and my mum had cut the article out of the TV Times and she'd put it into the case where she taped it off the TV. So that article stayed in there for quite a while. So yeah, I suspect it was probably my brother spotting that, who'd gone, oh, we should watch this. So me and my dad awesome. And my brother used to sit down and watch it together.
So you came from a big Star Trek family then?
Yeah, I think so. Although I'm the only one that's really a mega Trekkie these days. I did persuade my dad to watch all the way through Voyager.
What did he make of Voyager?
Oh, he quite enjoyed it, actually. He did quite like
Excellent.
It.
Excellent. And was he the traditional bread and butter Star Trek fan there from the original series?
Yeah, he watched original series first run in the UK, which I'm not quite sure how much later it was than in the States. I don't really know about the dates there. But
yeah, I think it was the 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
Yeah, excellent. And Richard, obviously, how did you come around to being a Star Trek fan, you know, that especially with the kind of the UK twist?
My dad was stationed over there in with the Air Force. And the first time, we've already discussed it actually on a previous Earl Grey episode. But like, yeah, for those of you who have not heard about it, I was sitting there just... I think it was after school, and Tin Man came on, and I was hooked after that. And, you know, I'm actually kind of jealous of you guys, because you guys see more TNG than I do, because, like, we have a BBC here on our channel list and everything, and it's always Next Generation. And I'm like, man, I wish that was all over the place. I wish Star Trek was on every major network over here, but it's not.
It's not really on kind of every network here nowadays anyway. Like, I think it's almost pretty much exclusively on CBS Action. It used to be kind of on the BBC, the Big British Castle, and then it moved to kind of Sky, and then some of it's on the Sci-Fi Channel, and then a lot of it's now on kind of CBS Action. It's not regular on British TV whatsoever, so you kind of have to seek it out on the kind of the backwater channels, the big 100 plus channel numbers to find it these days.
Oh, that's disappointing, because it's always on BBC over here.
Yeah, was it BBC America?
Yeah, I hear that, and I think, are we selling it back to you guys now? That just confuses me.
Yeah, so how does BBC America work, Richard?
You know, honestly, I don't know. I'm assuming, well, it definitely shows news broadcasts that are happening there for you guys as well. So anyone that's homesick, because I believe that my stepmother is actually English as well. She's from a little town called Banbury. And yeah, I believe she watches that here and there to, I guess, reconnect with home. Obviously, she keeps in contact with her family and whatnot. But I mean, it's, you know, it's news. So, but yeah, I assume basically it's the highlights of whatever's going on there in England, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've just always been kind of curious about the kind of contradiction between the title BBC America. It just doesn't seem quite right. It seems like we've taken back over America, that, you know, you threw our tea in the sea and then we've come back with a vengeance.
So nice. Brilliant.
So you're talking about, like, Kay, for example, that, you know, you were there bang on the beginning of the 90s when Star Trek The Next Generation started. I mean, I think when America was watching The Best of Both Worlds, waiting for that long summer, I don't think we'd even started The Next Generation by that point, or it must have been in and around that point. I mean, I didn't get into kind of The Next Generation until I think about 1992, in and around that time. I think I was about kind of 5 or 6, and I remembered vividly as anything. I think the first episode I really remembered watching was Time's Arrow, and they showed Time's Arrow Part 2, and then they had a break for some reason after that episode.
Yeah, I remember that.
And yeah, and the part I always remembered was there's a British program called Points of View, and someone wrote in a letter to Points of View to talk about how wonderful Time's Arrow was and how frustrating it was that there was now going to be this break for Star Trek The Next Generation. So yeah, that was quite kind of frustrating. So it was kind of like, I think, you know, up until kind of maybe, you know, repeats on Really Sky, like I was maybe seeing just like random episodes here and there on a Wednesday night on BBC Two, and it was so frustrating. It was back in that day where you miss the episodes, you're lucky if you ever see it again, you know, it feels like it's been lost into the ether. And it was really good kind of to eventually catch it all up. And then I always remember Generations coming out and that just being kind of the biggest thing ever here in the UK.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah, Richard, you're nodding away and everything like that. So did you experience the Generations period here in the UK?
Actually, when it came out, we just left England. So, I had to watch it here in the United States. But I was looking forward to that movie so much. And then, yeah, we left.
Oh, dear. What about yourself, Kay? You would have experienced that, obviously, having gone through the whole period of The Next Generation on TV. Was that an easy transition for you to get to the cinema to see Generations?
I don't actually remember whether I went to the cinema to see it, because we weren't really big cinema goers as a family. We never really did that very much. But I certainly remember watching it when it first came out on VHS. I remember that. And yeah, I remember it being really big over here. I remember all the posters and stuff on the bus stops.
Yes, I think I remember that. And the toys as well. I remember the toys were like massive. And I think that's definitely, we'll have to talk about the toys as well. But I remember Generation just feeling like the biggest kind of Trek moment at that time. And like, I don't think Deep Space Nine had started here in the UK yet. And I don't think Voyager had started really by the time Generations kind of came out here. And I mentioned it on a previous pod, I was so high hyped up for Generations, and I was hit by a stomach bug and I couldn't make it that day. And have you ever seen that episode of The Simpsons where Bart can't go see the Itchy and Scratchy movie?
Yes.
And he's just stuck in the house. That was my pain, that I felt like everyone was seeing Generations. There it was how it would work. Would it be like, it would be shown in the big cinema kind of in Aberdeen, which is about like 35 miles from where I grew up, and you know, that was kind of it. And then it would work its way to some of the smaller cinemas. So there's a town like 15 miles away from me in Ruri that was showing it, and I was kind of like, oh my god, I finally will have the chance to go see it. It was that purple poster with just the Enterprise warping away. And then I missed it again, and I wasn't able to go. And it was just like a nightmare. And the first time I got to see Generations wasn't in the UK, but it was in Spain, because someone was selling pirate VHS. And my parents picked me up the Flintstones movie with John Goodman and Rosie O'Donnell. And I watched them in some Spanish villa, just like this really bad pirate copy of Star Trek Generations.
Amazing.
And I probably watched that hundreds of times. Yeah. So yeah, that was a bit of a frustrating period.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. So like, one thing that kind of was always like a frustration for me kind of as a fan, you know, growing up in the 90s and as a kid and kind of the UK experience, and I think it's still kind of a bit of a problem now, is kind of the lack of Star Trek events here in the UK. I think I can think of a few over the years, and I've wondered if you've ever kind of gone to them. There was obviously, there's been a couple now of Star Trek Destination London, Birmingham events. There was the Star Trek exhibition. There's some sort of Star Trek museum randomly in Blackpool of all places.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of wondering, like, what kind of Star Trek things have you been able to go see, conventions? And did you always kind of feel like myself that during the 90s, it was just a frustrating period to be a Star Trek fan here in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go to any cons until the one last year, the destination that was in last October. I didn't get to any cons. I mean, I'd been to some cons, but not Star Trek ones. I'd actually met John Billingsley randomly at like a tiny little con in Wrexham, which is near where I live. Really, really random. He was just there. So yeah, I'd met him and that was it basically until I got to destination. But yeah, I do know what you mean. It's been something quite frustrating to not really have, when you see all the big stuff that's going on in the States and not really having that so much over here.
Yeah, like, did you get to any of the events when you were here, Richard?
No. My first Star Trek convention was actually the 50th at Vegas. So, that was definitely overwhelming. That's for sure. Like,
that's always the feeling I kind of get with like some of the Star Trek events that have been here in the past few years, is that you're saying overwhelming. I feel underwhelmed. I've always cast a kind of envious eye to America, and I remember like Star Trek Experience being like looking like the mecca of Star Trek things to see and do in the world. And I remember my grandparents, they'd been over in Vegas and they came back with like a Star Trek ceramic plate from there. I don't know where it is now. I think it was like a Best of Both Worlds one or something. And I was like, oh yeah, that was amazing. And I always wanted to go to the Star Trek Experience. It was my dream. And then for my 21st birthday and my parents' 25th wedding anniversary, we decided to do like a trip around kind of America and California, and we were going to go to Vegas. I was like, I can finally go to the Star Trek Experience. And they closed it a month before. And I was like, oh my God. It was the absolute biggest punishment. I was like, so close. Yet so far.
Got it.
My God, that place is, well, yeah, it was awesome. I'm sorry.
Tell us about it, Richard. Give us, this is a British episode, but let's hear a bit of self-harm.
I haven't been to a con or at least a Star Trek con at that time. Comic-Con, that's a whole different story. But like, oh wow, going to Vegas and to the Experience, it was definitely, I really wish they would have that kind of atmosphere for the 50th, because that would have been just amazing. Or at least even put everything back the way it was in the Hilton, just have it there, why not? But like, it was just, once you step through that gate, it was just amazing. It was everything that you could possibly think of when it deals with like models and uniforms and just characters all around, and they stayed in character. Oh my gosh, it's so awesome. And it was definitely an experience that I will never forget. But like when they closed it down, it's I really wanted to take Jennifer there, and I'm like, and when they closed it down, I'm like great.
Great. Oh, nightmare. Like, I remembered when I was a young boy, there was a Star Trek kind of exhibition. I've still got the program brochure. I picked up on eBay like last year for £1. And it was like basically this traveling Star Trek exhibition in the 90s that had like uniforms, costumes, props and everything. And I was a bit too young to like properly appreciate it. And my family were down visiting where I live now, Edinburgh. And we were like, oh, we'll have to go along, because obviously they've got a Trekkie son. Let's indulge the geek in the family. And I think I ran through the exhibit just to get to the gift shop. I was just like, I want to get to all the Star Trek toys. And I was just like, you know, oh, look at that uniform. Don't care. Where's the gift shop? And I always remembered, like, I bought, bizarrely, just like picked up off the shelf, the video I got was like Masks and Eye of the Beholder. And my brother, who wasn't a Star Trek fan, but just wanted a toy, was like the Picard with his like gray suit and everything like that on. So yeah, like I wish I could go back in time and properly appreciate that museum for all it's worth. So yeah, that was a bit of a frustration.
You know, I actually, if you want to see some of the Star Trek Experience, I mean, it's not going to be the same experience, but there's a sci-fi museum in Seattle, or at least that's what I've been hearing, that a lot of the Star Trek Experience stuff went to. So if you ever want to come back to America and see what was there, because they actually, I remember seeing a documentary about it, and I can't remember where exactly it's at, but yeah, like I said, it's in Seattle somewhere. But like, yeah, it's got all the stuff. So if you really want to go back and see those uniforms, go for it.
Yeah, sounds good. Like, and like for you, like kind of Kay, like you were saying that this was your first Star Trek experience in the kind of few months just past at Destination, and I remembered seeing you there everywhere I went, and you were saying like, you know, this was your first one, for you, but this being the first one out the gate. Did it live up to the expectations? Did it feel a disappointment? Like for a UK fan to, you know, to have it finally come and be able to take part in it, how did it kind of feel to go there? Was it what you expected, or was it kind of tame in comparison to all the photos and pictures that we're subjected to every year from the Star Trek Con in Vegas?
Well, I think it probably didn't live up to Vegas, like even vaguely, but I had a great time. I know a lot of people were disappointed with some of the stuff. The thing that disappointed me probably was the lack of traders more than anything, mm-hmm. because there was very few traders there really. And I'd had, you know, quite a few things that I wanted to look for, and there just wasn't really that much there. But I had a great time. I had a really good time. So
what were the highlights for you then? Obviously this, like, no, probably a bit of pressure and excitement. Like what kind of lived up to the hype and kind of going forward? What would you say kind of they could do better for the UK fans?
What could they do better? I just think it felt like, and I don't know whether this is true of Vegas as well, because obviously I've not been, but it felt very commercial. It felt very much mm-hmm. like a sort of, get as much money out of you as possible, push you through, you know, photos, autographs, just churn, like a money factory is kind of a bit how it felt. I think because it was my first one, I think I probably had a bit of rose tinted glasses with it, and there were some people there that I really wanted to meet and I was really excited about. So I think I probably saw it a bit with that sort of view. But I think if I went to another one and it was the same, I'd probably be a bit like, I want something more out of this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I totally agree with that. I mean,
so Richard, this is a question for you then.
Oh, okay.
Is a Las Vegas Star Trek convention in the home of sin, money, and vanity a commercial convention as well? Or is it a mama and papa Star Trek convention?
You know, that's funny because when she was mentioning about the vendors and everything, that's one of the things that was my biggest criticism about Star Trek Las Vegas, was that the vendors that are there in Vegas were the same vendors that come to Starfest, which is also a dedicated convention. I mean, it has us two or three Star Trek guests and then everything else like Stargate or something like that. I think this year was Connor Trinneer and Michael Dorn and Nana Visitor came last year, and this year it's going to be Odo. And then that's it. So, it was the same. I was kind of disappointed with that because I was expecting more, more vendors, some more cool stuff that people made by hand or something like that. But yeah, I was extremely disappointed with that. But like the schedule, that was the one thing I hated about the whole entire thing, because all the cool stuff that I wanted to see was in one theater, and then on the other side was another cool thing that I really wanted to see as well. It's like, oh my god, you guys are killing me. So
yeah, the schedule was hard.
Yeah, you had to pick and choose and which ones you really wanted to see and what you didn't want to see, but you wanted to see all of it. But it's an amazing experience. If anyone's listening, or everyone that's listening, it's definitely a marvelous experience. It's especially if you're a Star Trek fan. But yeah, it's just don't bring a light wallet.
I mean, the thing that kind of has always bugged me is kind of like a Brit looking on kind of with the envious eyes, is that the if it was only 1 month later, it would make such a difference to for those in the UK. Like the prices of the flights are double because it's what we would class as the school holidays. Have it 1 month later, as soon as it hits September 16th, those prices are slashed. And like I could go to Vegas for a quarter of the price I would like the previous month. And I was thinking, like, it's my 30th pretty soon. I was like, oh, maybe I'll go to Vegas to Star Trek. That's what I'm going to properly do at this time. And then I just looked at the flights and it was like over £1,000. Yeah. And that was before like ticket prices, accommodation. I was like, no, I just cannot justify that cost whatsoever.
How much is that American?
It's probably like flights are probably maybe kind of 800, 900.
Oh, that's
I don't know.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty high.
But yeah, it's crazy. Like, it's so frustrating, and it just kind of prices you out of even kind of thinking, oh, maybe I'll do it.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I looked at the price of the flights and went, no.
Yeah, yeah. I know. It's just, I can just can't justify the cost. It's a heartbreaker.
Oh, come
so it's something I just.
It's
I'm
a Star Trek convention.
Yeah, and I don't. I'm a man living by my own, and I can't justify.
Maybe we need to start a Kickstarter.
Yeah, exactly.
Get the Brits to Las Vegas.
Yeah, like how much would people pay to like meet us? We'll do meet and greets and sign-ins and everything like that.
I'll
like,
sign autographs.
We'll get Creation to pay for our flights out, and then we'll do some sign-ins, like $5 and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. I'll put some sort of witty Scottish comment on
you gotta bring a lot of headshots in. Me, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, like I'll bring haggis, all that sort of stuff. Iron Brew, I'll sell that. You know, whatever.
Oh yeah,
like,
Iron Brew. Yeah,
we'll reach out to Creation and make this happen. It's going to be, look out for it, 2017, 18. The Brits are going to have their own panel and all that sort of stuff.
I'm tweeting
Move over
right
Bridge
now.
Mates. The Brits are coming. That's I'm going to make that
mates.
Happen. The crowdfunding's happening.
The Brits mates, I love it.
The Brit mates.
Exactly. Like, you see it as... You see it, Kay, and I see it.
Yeah.
Like, To The Journey and Earl Grey are, like, pretty high up in, like, the UK iTunes charts. So, you know, for every person that puts us into the UK iTunes chart, if they can dip in, like, £50 or something like that, we'll easily hit our target. That doesn't seem too much to ask, frankly.
For a low donation of only £1.
Exactly. Well, maybe more than that. Maybe triple that.
Well, if you guys got a lot of listeners that over there and love the show, yeah, I think you'll be fine.
Exactly. That's what we're going to have to do. We do this for free. We don't ask for much. All we're asking for is to pay some flights, accommodation, some, you know, the gold level VIP ticket. We're just being really humble.
We're
not
traveling
asking
cargo.
For much. Yeah, well, no, first class. Like, we are kind of, you know, the VIP and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, we don't ask for much, you know, Patreon, you know, put in like an extra $100 and say earmarked for Lee and Kay's glorious adventure. Exactly. We'll do a podcast out there or something like that to justify the cost. So yeah, there you go. We'll do a crowdfund for that.
Listeners, please don't actually send us money.
Exactly. I don't want to be in trouble for mail fraud.
Yeah, because I think the convention's actually sold out.
Exactly. Probably. So, I'm sure there's like the VIP, like the £15,000 tickets. I mean, it's their fault for not getting the tickets for us sooner. So
yeah.
We've got to get the more expensive ones. I first went to a kind of Star Trek convention. I think it was one of the first ones in London when they did Destination London. And I just couldn't believe it had finally kind of come. And I was the same as you, Kay. Like, I'd kind of like tinted glasses perhaps to it because I think it was much bigger and better than the one in Birmingham that had just passed. And I could justify spending all the money on photo shoots with Patrick Stewart, William Shatner, all these things, like going to all the talks. And it was like a total buzz to finally get it because like up until then, there was really no Star Trek representation out with maybe the odd Z-list cast member and stuff. Yeah. So I think the Destination Star Trek things have been really good to kind of bring something to the UK and give the fans somewhere to go, and that's not necessarily a bad thing whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think hopefully, like I say, they're meant to be globetrotting around Europe. I think they've been in the England 3 times and Germany the once, so it seems a bit of a kind of bizarre combination of kind of dates and plans.
Yeah,
are you talking about FedCon?
FedCon's always based in Germany, but like Destination Star Trek, it's meant to be a European thing. Ah. So it was like in London, then Germany somewhere, and then back to London, a break, then in Birmingham. So just like 100 odd miles north of London. So it seems to be a bit of a kind of definitely British based kind of thing. So yeah, like I personally quite enjoyed actually Star Trek Birmingham. I don't mean to sound too critical of it. It was actually good fun in the end. Like I was kind of a bit frustrated kind of with the build up to it because it felt like, you know, some of the people I wanted to see were not going and all these sorts of things. And then I had got tickets and at one point I was like, oh man, we haven't got an accommodation yet. We haven't booked flights, not flights, travel, I mean, like, can I justify going? And in the off chance, I applied for like a press pass and I got it and I just absolutely milked it for all it was worth. It was, it was so much fun. Like the highlight for me was like the William Shatner was doing like a talk on the Saturday night. It was like a stand-up show. And like, it was like, oh, you cannot get into paid talks with this ticket. And I was like, try me. And so I just was like, I swaggered into this William Shatner talk and I went right up to the front row because it wasn't like seated things. And I was like, the people in the front two rows basically paid like £150 to sit there. And I just planted my butt right between them. And like, they just
more than that.
Were checking over. Yeah, they checked over people's like tickets and stuff. And I just showed my badge and the guy went, yep, not a problem. I was like, brilliant. And it was really good to get like that kind of level of access because I think the biggest frustration thing is like it is a cash cow that all these talks, you know, you get the free talks, but they're so, they just milk you. You get this basic standard ticket for like £30, but that's before you include parties, before you include tickets, before you include signatures. And it ends up being more than it would cost to go to like New York for a long week. And that's the frustrating part that, you know, it's the same with every franchise, really. I've done Star Wars Celebration and everything like that. And it's you do feel like a cash cow, but like you're sometimes just so grateful that you're getting access to some of the stuff that you always dreamed of and looked on the TV. And the fact that we had such a kind of dry spell of that kind of stuff in the UK kind of means you're a bit more forgiving of it, maybe.
Mm. Yeah.
So do you guys have to pay to get into the... I guess the panels and all that kind of stuff on
top
of your ticket?
Not all of them. It depends on which ones they are.
Ah.
So some of them were paid, but some of them weren't. They had three stages, and the two of the stages had all free talks on, and then one had talks that were paid.
Huh.
Because of the past.
Yeah, so things like, kind of William Shatner, you know, all the kind of the A-list talks and all that sort of stuff. If you were like a cast member on Enterprise, you're a free ticket. If you were like a kind of recurring guest star, you're a free ticket. But if you've got your name in the credits, if you were like one of the prime names, you're like a ticket kind of cost and all that sort of stuff. And all that kind of goes back into kind of like paying off their kind of bills and everything like that. So yeah, it's certainly great, but you've just got to be prepared to spend the money. And I think, I don't think I'm going to go to another one for a good few years now. I feel kind of pretty well served by it and stuff like that. So yeah, unless it's kind of closer at home for me, I think I'm done with the convention scene for probably a little while.
Yeah, that's what we said about Star Trek Las Vegas, because we were only there for 2 days, but I can't even tell you how much money I spent. I don't want to tell you how much money I spent, but it's definitely it's definitely expensive.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of ties into another thing. Like, I always think the UK has maybe had better like Star Trek stuff to buy though than America. I don't know if that's maybe something you feel, okay? Like, I always think Star Trek merchandise in the UK has always been a bit cooler and better than America. Maybe that's just me.
I don't know. I don't really know what, like, because I don't really know what they've had. I think now, yeah, in the States they get tons more stuff than we do, but I think maybe back in the day, I don't really know. I mean, I remember having all the Playmate stuff when I was a kid. I had a lot of that stuff. I remember when you could buy it all in Toys R Us.
Yes, exactly where I bought mine. Always Toys R Us. It's all there, all under one roof. Yep. It's called Toys R Us. Those Playmate toys, like $6.99, proper size action figures.
Yeah.
They were so cool. Like, I've gone through a bit of, like, I'm turning 30 and I'm pretty sure I'm in crisis and I'm buying all the stuff that I couldn't afford or buy when I was a kid. So, like, in the past year, I've bought all the Playmate First Contact toys. So I've got all the action figures and I've got the Enterprise, the Borg Sphere, the Phoenix. And I think I've just officially lost the plot because you can get like one of the people that you can get them in the spacesuit with the helmet.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah. Well, so I've got the Picard one. Then I was like, but there was three of them on the hull, so I might as well just buy another two and just keep the helmets on them. And that's technically Worf in space, that's Lieutenant Hawk in space and Picard. And I genuinely think I'm cracking up. I'm literally buying the nonsense that my parents couldn't even, you know, even like, other stuff. Like, I'm buying like Star Trek monthly bulk on from like eBay and all that sort of stuff. Like 100 issues for £10. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I feel I have to buy it because I wanted it so much as a kid, or I could only get a few copies because it was a lot of money. I'm literally having this midlife crisis where I'm just buying up nonsense from my childhood that I just can't justify buying.
I suppose it's better than a Ferrari.
Yeah. If I could afford a Ferrari, I would be buying that over like an extra edition of a Playmates action figure.
But you'd have a Star Trek personalized plate though, right?
I did, but I don't know where that vanished to. Like, as I say, it came back from Vegas and stuff. So exactly. It's just, it's crazy. But I think like the UK, like they kind of probably best, I don't know if you've gone to them, Kay, but I think the best kind of Star Trek events that I've kind of gone on in the past few years have been the kind of events at the Albert Hall. Have you gone to any of them?
I haven't gone to them, no. I know of them though. I think they've been pretty cool, yeah.
Amazing. I remembered when it was announced, like I immediately bought tickets and I was like, I don't care if I'm going myself, I'm going to go. And I went to the Star Trek, they announced Star Trek 09, and then the next day they were like, oh, and we're going to do Into Darkness as well. I'm still waiting for a Star Trek Beyond. And like those Star Trek events at the Albert Hall are just incredible. Like I know that people are very critical of the Kelvin movies, quite rightly here and there. But I think like when you see them with a live audience, you just, there's something really special. Like when they were playing with the live orchestra and the Enterprise drops below the clouds and then comes back up, like there's spontaneous applause, and it's things like that where you like these movies genuinely do have an audience, even though you would look on forums and stuff and you would think, oh, people are just not happy with these movies or think they're a load of MacGuffins or whatever. Like they do have an audience, and they seem to be, you know, to sell out the Albert Hall like four times is pretty impressive for movies that people think are the worst. And I think that shows that Star Trek has a great audience and love the music. And I think they did the Star Trek Into Darkness. And then I think about 18 months ago, they did The Ultimate Voyage, where they played a selection of the live music. And that was just something incredible. To hear the First Contact score live as well was pretty special.
Yeah, I bet.
That's another thing I spent too much on as well.
You go to the Ultimate Voyage as well?
I did.
What did you think of it?
It came through Denver, and oh my gosh, that was incredible. Because I think I got the hoodie, I got pins for Jennifer and I got the CD, I got the movie poster, or not movie poster, the concert poster, and I think I got the program too. Yeah.
But I'm trying to say you're sponsored by this, Richards.
Well, there you go. I'm going to fund your guys' tickets.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. Like, The Ultimate Voyage I thought was pretty cool. I mean, my only frustration was that I wish it was more focused a bit on the music. They had obviously this live video, and like the audio on that was just a bit too loud. Like, I just wanted to let the music kind of breathe on its own. Like, I would have been just happy to hear an orchestra symphony just playing the music. But to hear that kind of music live is always such a treat. Yeah. And I'm really hoping Star Trek Beyond gets the same treatment down in the Albert Hall. I mean, on the first night of 09, like Simon Pegg came out, and then they were like, oh, and just, this was while Force Awakens was being made, they're like, oh, and he's just working on a small movie just down the road, not because obviously Pinewood's not too far from London, it's JJ Abrams, and he came out, and yeah, it was just totally awesome. We were sitting there like going into the Into Darkness night thinking, I wonder if Benedict Cumberbatch will be here or something along those lines, and alas, he wasn't. But yeah, it was pretty cool. Like, so kind of for UK, what have been some of your kind of favourite Star Trek memories that could have only have been made in the UK for you?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I'm not really sure. I mean, I have a lot of memories of TNG from being a kid. I think I there were quite a few people, I think, that sort of watched it. I found it was quite mainstream. I didn't really feel like Star Trek was a weird thing when I was a kid. I felt like there were a lot of kids in my school that watched it. I remember it being, you know, having sort of, you know, the Star Trek books and stuff. It was quite a cool thing to have. I don't think it was really like a geeky thing. Certainly not when I was in primary school. Maybe a little bit older, but not in those early days, I think, because it was new and it just come back on. And I think a lot of people's parents remembered it from the back in the day and sort of got them watching it, and being a slightly different audience in the UK with BBC and stuff back then being, we didn't have that many channels. So I think a lot of people saw it compared within the state. I mean, what, 1990, we still had four channels then, right?
Yeah that's
we
crazy.
Still had
yeah,
four
yeah,
channels.
You're spot on, yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't have cable then.
We had four channels and two of them were BBC.
Yeah, my dad used to work for a cable company out there as like a side job, and I remember him talking about cable and everything, and I think what you had to pay an enormous amount of money to get even the stations in the United States by satellite and everything, and it's, oh my gosh. But yeah, I remember just the basic channels, you only had like four or five channels. It's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it would have been four channels back then, because I don't think we got channel 5 until like the mid-90s. So, you know, when TNG first started, that was one of four channels. So I think a lot more people saw it because of that. But there weren't that many TV programs that were niche and out the way, because there were so few channels, everybody saw everything.
Like, for me, like, I'm almost kind of jealous and all that sort of stuff. And, like, I don't mean this in a rude way, but I cannot relate to you, your experience of being a Star Trek fan at primary school. Like, I was one of only two Star Trek fans in primary school. Like, me and my best friend at school, we were really, like, the only Star Trek fans. And while everyone else was playing football or running around, whatever, we were running around pretending we were in Star Trek. And I think I was a precursor to Star Trek Voyager in a way, because I always remember it to this day. Like, when we were playing our adventures, we used to always pretend that we were fighting the Borg. And my mate turned around to me one day going, can we not fight the Borg this week? Can we not just do something
the
else?
Borg again, passe.
As a villain. Exactly. I was like the precursor to the criticism that was going to come for the writer's room in Voyager. And yeah, like, no one at school gave a toss really about kind of Star Trek apart from us two. And we were kind of made fun of as kind of nerds and geeks. And we probably brought up a bit upon ourselves. I'm not saying we justified any kind of bullying, but we were just like, just kind of really nerdy. And just like, you know, we weren't willing to kind of really necessarily engage with other kids. And we were just kind of playing Star Trek, talking about Star Trek. And yeah, like, when I kind of went to high school, I kind of lost a bit of interest in it and kind of Star Trek. I mean, it was that kind of time. It was the early 2000s, you know, I started high school kind of 99. So, you know, kind of Insurrection and, you know, all these sorts of Nemesis and then Enterprise. It just kind of was just kind of dying a death really at that point. And that was kind of affected. It was more fun to go out and hang out with girls and, you know, go to parties than, you know, talk about Star Trek and online forums and stuff.
Do both
it was
at the same time? You know,
yeah, exactly. And now I can. It's, you know, it took me like 29 years or whatever, but I finally achieved that good balance and stuff. So yeah, that was pretty cool. And I think, like, for me, and I don't know if it's the same for you now then, Kelsey, but like, it's been fascinating to see the kind of the change in British culture and the attitude to Star Trek. It seems kind of pretty cool to like Star Trek, yeah, now. Like, you've got the conventions, you've got sellouts at the Albert Hall of all places, the most prestige event. You know, like, Star Trek Beyond did well here in the UK, and so have the other movies. And I think that's pretty good to see. Yeah. I think, like, you know, and I don't know, and it's kind of more difficult now, I think, to maybe like Star Trek, because it is harder to get the, you know, you can't really watch on TV as much as we did. You've got all these different channels, unless you've got Netflix. It's very difficult to dive into Star Trek, I think.
Yeah, I mean, sci-fi do show it, and as you said before, CBS Action, but it seems to be a bit random. It seems to be random what you get. It's not like they show a series all the way through and you know when it's going to be on and all that type of thing. It's just a bit hit and miss. I do catch it occasionally on sci-fi and stuff because it's nice just to get a random episode and not have to think about what episode you want to watch. It's nice to get something random. But I think mainly sci-fi, I think, have Next Gen and Voyager at the moment. I don't think they're showing yeah. any of the others.
No, like, I mean, I think one thing that has actually gone in the UK's favour, and it makes me chuckle, is that we obviously had the big £70 DVD box sets when they yeah. came out, like, the early 2000s, and then we got the slimline, like, £30 box sets, like, a year or so later, that they're now only releasing in America. That's pretty yeah. crazy. Like, I've seen all this big fuss, like, Deep Space Nine re-released and cheaper
know,
now
and
in
I'm
America.
Like,
it's like,
we've
yeah,
had that,
we had that
for
like
ever.
10 years. Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, that you can see those box sets for, like, £5 in, like, secondhand DVD shops and stuff. It's absolutely crazy. Like, it's like, and even the Blu-ray box sets are pretty cheap in the UK yeah. by kind of, like, the, yeah, so I think that kind of helps. But I think it's more difficult you know, while it's more accepted, unless you've got Netflix, I think it's very, very difficult to watch Star Trek and to get in it. And I think there could be like maybe a future generation that kind of, unless they're see, I think they're watching the Kelvin timeline movies, but they're really going to struggle to maybe get access to Star Trek kind of elsewhere. I think they're not going to have the adventures we had where we could tune in regularly and get to watch the movies.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember the original series movies being on TV a lot when we were kids. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Voyage Home always seemed to be on like all the time on ITV.
Yeah, Voyage Home and Star Trek V, they seem to show that a lot as well.
Yes.
I don't know why.
I know, like, I always think the, and I think it lends, you know, to my crisis or bizarre crisis that I've experienced. Like, I think that one of my kind of favorite and most torturous things growing up was like, because like the way it would rotate obviously was that when it went to Sky, it was like Deep Space Nine and Voyager. And Voyager originally kicked off on the UK on BBC Two with an amazing like Star Trek night hosted by Jonathan Ross. And then it went to the cable channel Sky, and then it was like you would get a season of Star Trek Voyager Monday every week, and then after 26 weeks it would turn to the season of Deep Space Nine straight for 26 weeks. Then on that, so even though they were airing at the same time in America, they would, it was this weird like you could only have one at a time.
Yeah,
so like with the videos you had to like, oh man, I really want, you know, you would have a choice with the videos, like, oh man, this isn't going to be on for like 9 months. So I can buy it now or I can rent it. And I like, I don't know why, like I kind of loved the joy of going to the shops and being able to go, oh man, which video am I going to pick? Will it be the Deep Space Nine one? Will it be the Voyager one? Or will it be this cheaper TNG one? You know, because it's been out for a few years.
Yeah.
I love that kind of trick, treat of kind of picking the videos.
Oh, memory lane. You just reminded me of going to Blockbuster and renting out videos. Renting out videos. Yeah.
Blockbuster's gone. Blockbuster's been gone for some time.
No, I know. I just, like, yeah.
Like for me, like I it was always such a kind of, it was a real treat because like the nearest Blockbuster, because I lived in the countryside, was like 15 miles away. So every so often, like on a Saturday, we would have like a treat where we'd like drive to this town, get a Chinese takeaway, a video rental, head back home. But we'd have to pretty much return the next day to return this video. So essentially you're on a 60-mile round trip to rent a video. I mean, it's just crazy. And like, I always loved it because the Star Trek, you know, video rentals were like 4 episodes instead of 2. So you were getting like extra episodes instead of just like the 2 for like 12 quid. So that was like, it was, you were away getting this like rental for 5 quid, but you were getting 2 extra episodes as opposed to just 2. So you were getting a bit more value. So if you thought one episode was bad, but the other like 2 or 3 were great, you're like, that's not a problem. If you were buying a video and it was like one that was good and the other one was bad, you're like, I can't justify spending £12 of my pocket money on that.
Yeah.
And like I even like quite recently, like it's been kind of a bit of a holy grail I've been trying to find. Like I've kind of alluded to it like once or twice, like I collect Star Trek VHS artwork, like the UK stuff.
Yeah.
And I've got like about 600 covers now and all that sort of stuff. And I've always been trying to get like the Blockbuster stuff. And someone recently put up the whole set on eBay for £250. I was like, I'm no way spending that money. And I messaged him. I was like, hey, I'd be willing to give you like £40. That's really generous because, you know, you can buy the Blu-ray for that kind of thing. And the guy was like, oh, no, it's kind of like, it's a very rare to have them all together. And I was thinking like, no kidding. So I was like, what I'm going to do is like, I will pay you money to scan those covers and send them to me. And then I'll print these ones off all myself and stuff, just because it was like it would be almost impossible to get like all 45 of them. So it's like I think like the same with like the toys is the same with these video covers. Like I spent so much time agonizing over which cover, like letting a cover decide which video I wanted to buy that day, and then like kind of like now I can have them all together in these binders essentially.
Yeah.
And I can just dip in and go, hey, I can look at that cover or something like that, and I think they're amazing little pieces of artwork.
Yeah.
And compared to the American artwork, which is pretty atrocious, I think the UK stuff was pretty ahead of its time.
Yeah, it's really interesting actually how you get all this different artwork internationally. One thing that reminds me of, actually, and this is something that's been discussed in some of the sort of Voyager web fandom websites and stuff that I've been on and forums and stuff. And the German releases for the Voyager relaunch novels have amazing artwork that's like way nicer than any of the other artwork that I've seen. Because I think most of the relaunch novels, as far as I'm aware, we get the same artwork as the States. I'm not aware of the artwork being different, but the German ones, apparently,
PJ,
they get
Matt
their
Rushing and Bruce Gibson.
Yeah, they apparently get their own artwork, and I've seen some of them, and they look awesome. They look really cool.
Yeah, like I think the VHS artwork for the UK was pretty awesome for the most part. It was very unique. Like, I think the UK stuff's pretty boring, and as I say, it's been such a treat to collect them and like obviously shove them all up on like Trekcore and everything like that. And people seem to kind of get their memories like evoked of them. And I think like that was kind of part of the joy of the 90s, was like Star Trek felt rare and special, and like to get to watch a couple episodes or to watch it on a Wednesday night felt special. And I think, I don't know if that's special for people nowadays.
I don't know. I think watching TV, I'm not even sure if TV is the right word now, because people don't actually watch it on a TV, but watching, you know, serialized drama, for want of a better way of putting it, it's different now. You know, it's all about the binge watch. It's not about watching that one episode and then waiting a week for the next episode and then waiting a summer for the next season kind of thing. It's a different thing.
Yeah, definitely spoiled, because that's kind of what we're doing with 24 right now.
Oh, 24.
Oh my god, this is awesome. But like we're trying not to. That's what we did for Game of Thrones as well. That we didn't watch for like 2 or 3 weeks or something like that, and then watched it all in one night, those episodes, and then watched a new one at that day as well. But no, yeah, definitely, it's definitely a different culture. I mean, what Netflix puts out an entire season of. Luke Cage, and I watch it all in one day.
Yeah. Like, I have the day booked off for House of Cards. So thanks to my generous holiday allocation, I'm like,
Orange is
I
the
will
new
put
black.
One day towards House. I've only watched the first episode of that.
It's
I must
amazing.
Admit.
I haven't seen
I've
it yet.
I've heard that. Yeah, like, I'd love to see Kate Mulgrew. The bits I've seen of her in that that show look pretty awesome.
She's incredible.
I've got a list of so much to watch, and I mean, I'm pretty much just rewatching Grand Designs all the time, so it's a real struggle to...
I love Grand Designs.
Everyone loves Grand Designs.
Grand Designs is amazing.
Exactly. Like, you know, do you get Grand Designs in America, Richard?
I don't even know what that is, dude.
So it's a bunch of toffs. I'll let you explain, Kay.
So basically, it's people with a lot of money who decide that they're going to either buy some land or buy a house and like renovate it like ridiculously amazing. And they get this guy who goes and like films them doing it all.
Huh. But it's so relaxing.
And everything always goes wrong. They always get flooding, and like the wife always has a baby halfway through the bills, doesn't she? Every time.
Exactly. And it always goes, it was meant to be finished by May. It's now the winter.
Yeah.
And everything has come to a halt. And they're living in a caravan and
with like eight children.
Exactly. It's
brilliant.
It's ridiculous. But yeah, what a show it is.
BBC America needs to be showing Grand Designs. That's all I've got to say.
Grand Designs.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me see if that's even in...
It'll be on YouTube. I'm sure there'll be clips of it on YouTube.
I'll send you some stuff, Richard. That'll keep you occupied.
I'm looking forward to it.
No, definitely. I mean, I can't believe that's been nearly 50 minutes already. Does anyone have any like points or anything they want to make before we wrap up?
No.
You anything you want to add, Kay? Or anything we've glossed over, that, or any stories you'd like to share?
The only other real thing that I sort of really is probably my most abiding memory of starting to watch Star Trek, and I have talked about this a little bit on other sort of parts of the network before, but I'll mention it because it just really sticks in my head. I don't know why, but despite the exciting TV Times article, I assume we must have been out on the day that Encounter at Farpoint was on and we had to tape it, because the very first episode I saw was The Naked Now.
And what did you think of The Naked Now?
I loved it when I was a kid. I probably didn't even understand half of it, but I loved it.
Yeah.
And the thing that stuck with me for years and years, which when I came back to Star Trek later on and the DVDs started to come out and I started buying the DVDs, the thing that stuck in my head was that scene at the end with Data putting all the chips back into the computer. That just that stayed in my head. That was just in my head for years as a kid. That was just that was my first thing that really stuck in my head as Star Trek. So that's my little Star Trek abiding memory there.
I really like The Naked Now. It's so silly. It's kind of funny and stuff like that. Like, I think that's the thing with kind of Star Trek sometimes is that episodes kind of like The Naked Now and Threshold get classed as, this is the worst episode ever. It's so stupid. It's like, yeah, it's stupid, but it's funny and it's like something, it's just ridiculous in its own right. Give me that over like so many episodes of Star Trek where it's like, there's an anomaly. There's an ambassador with a secret. Oh my God, I've been like through this so many times. Give me that episode where it's a bit nuts. Like, I can tell you everything about Threshold. I cannot remember anything about that episode where it was like they go into that cloud or nebula or whatever. You know, those episodes really stand out in all the 729 episodes. So things like Naked Now and, you know, I think it gets an unfair reputation. I mean, it is poor, but it's got its charms, I think.
I still love it now, I still love it now.
Exactly. Well, we'll have to do like a group commentary on it one day. Like,
that would be fab. I'd love to do that.
Yeah. We'll do that as a patron special one day or something like that. Even Richard's buzzing clearly for that. So
hey, Naked Now commentary.
He's probably glad it's not Code of Honor or something like that.
Oh, Code of Honor.
Well, that is terrible.
Oh, man.
Don't go down there again, Richard. Well, abort. Talking about the British experience as Star Trek fans isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what's been happening on all our other shows.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
My casting choices, okay, would be for Ruck, you gotta go with Dave Bautista, right? He's Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. He played Jinx in...
Inspector?
Yeah, not Jinx. What's his name? Hinks.
Hinks. Mr. Hinks. Yeah, Mr. Hinks.
That's the wrong James Bond film, everybody.
The 602 Club.
Going back to the Gotham thing really quickly, I know this is semi-derailing. Why would you want to move to Gotham? I mean, he has to have been there. It's like the picture that he has on his wall is this beautiful, shining, like, daytime view, if I'm not mistaken, of Gotham, which I don't think we ever see. It was like, I'm not really sure. Charm City looks quite nice.
Saturday morning trek.
It's very much like a continuation of the original series.
You know what? You raise a very good point, and it's one we probably should have talked about earlier, is that we talk so much about the animation and the limitations of the medium that we forget about the writing. And overall, it's pretty strong throughout the run.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
You can listen to every show on the network at Trek.fm with links for iTunes, streaming services, and a direct download link. This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPod, iPad, Kindle, Android, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/TrekFM. Thank you, Audible, for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. If you are a weekly listener and would like to directly help Earl Grey, please consider becoming a patron of Trek FM. At patreon.com/trekfm, you can choose a pledge level and receive rewards. For example, $5 a month gets you into our patron zone. You get exclusive content and access to our early releases. At the $15 a month gets you a chance to participate in our monthly roundtable discussions. And those are so much fun, getting to talk with everyone. You'll really enjoy that. At the $25 a month, you get associate producer credits for any podcast you choose. We would like to take this moment to thank our current Patreon associate producers, Michael Huter and Justin Ozer. Thank you for supporting Earl Grey. Another way to help out the network and get cool stuff is to visit Redbubble. At redbubble.com/shop/trekfm, you can find amazing designs for shirts, pillows, phone cases, and more. And with each purchase, a portion of the sales goes to Trek FM. Connect with other Trek FM listeners on our Facebook discussion group called the Babel Conference. You can search in Facebook Babel, B-A-B-E-L, or you can like the facebook.com/trekfm page for show updates and announcements. The network is also on Twitter at Trek FM.
If you would like to contact Lee, Richard, or Amy, that's me, visit trek.fm/contact to send us a subspace message, or you can find us on social media.
So, Richard, if people wanted to reach out to you on the network and beyond, where can people find you?
Well, they can find me on the Babel Conference. I pop in here and there, cause a little trouble. But other than that, I'm also on Twitter, and my handle is xransom.
What about yourself, Kay? You've got your own show here on the network, and I'm sure there's a huge amount of crossover between the two shows, but for people that maybe are just next generation focused, tell us a little bit about your show and maybe some episodes that people might be wanting to check out.
Yeah, sure. So you can hear me on To The Journey, which is Trek FM's dedicated Voyager podcast. We recently did our 200th episode. We had one of our patrons on, and we had a really great chat about the premise of Voyager and about Caretaker and stuff like that. So that one was really good. And we've got an interview coming up in a couple of weeks. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but it should be pretty cool, so watch out for that one. Other than that, you can find me in the Babel Conference, and if you want to look me up on Twitter, my handle is Choco Weeble.
Yeah, and if you want to find me on the thing, yeah, I pop up on the Babel Conference here and there. You can find me at Lee_Nostromo. You can find me at Star Trek VHS. You can find me on the Filibuster podcast talking about movie, nerd, and geek culture. And you can find me sometimes on the Glasgow is Green football podcast. So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Today is a good day to die.
How much did that cost?
Great joy and gratitude.